One of the wonderful things about Buddhism is that it has a really precise view on the nature of reality as being open-ended and dynamic. And because of that, every time you hear a Buddhist teaching, you might be hearing very different views on the nature of reality depending on what lineage you're hearing the teachings from. So this teaching that I'm giving today is actually from the perspective of Tantric Buddhism or Vajrayana Buddhism in the Nyingma lineage. And that view is really quite particular. If you heard a teaching from Theravadan Buddhism or even another Vajrayana Buddhist lineage that had more of a monastic background, then it would be a different presentation on the nature of reality. And why is that? It's because reality, as we think of it, is usually some kind of objective it, some kind of truth or some kind of thing. And that's really the way we conceive of it in the West. But in Buddhism, it's this fascinating view that actually reality is open-ended, and because of our subjective method of experiencing reality, we might experience it in many different ways. And so before I launch into today's class, it's an important thing to keep in mind that this nature of reality that we're talking about and how we could experience it in particular for ourselves or how we talk about it in different Buddhist traditions might be different. And so today's class has one particular perspective on the nature of reality, and that is non-duality. Non-duality is the major buzzword today. I know that I hear about it all the time, not only in Buddhist schools, but in also schools that draw on Vedantic philosophy, Advaita Vedanta, and schools that are from India and all kinds of traditions in that are newly developing from the New Age here in the West. There is a sense that non-duality is important. And what's so interesting about that is that we all use this term, non-duality, in really different ways. And I feel so excited about talking to you about the view of non-duality in Tantric Buddhism in particular, because it's quite sophisticated, and so that excites me. And also, though, it is presenting to us a way of relating to reality more and more directly. And not to say that other views don't have that, but in particular, it is a kind of method that this understanding of non-duality that's in Tantric Buddhism is actually a method for opening up to whole dimensions of what we are and our life and our situations that we might not usually allow ourselves to experience when we have a narrower view. And so in some way, this view of non-duality is a kind of key to entering more fully and wholeheartedly into our life experiences and into what we are. So today's class is called Non-Duality in Tantric Buddhism, or I also like to think of it as not-duality isn't the same as non-duality. Because oftentimes when people hear the term non-duality, what they're actually thinking in their mind is not-duality. In Buddhism, this is talked about in a paradigm called the four denials, or the four extremes, or the four confusions, a teaching that dates back to Shakyamuni Buddha. And it is a description of four ways we actually distort reality. And instead of experiencing non-duality, we experience four distortions. So that's what I'd like to focus on in our time together tonight, how we might experience reality directly, how we might distort that experience. What is duality? What is non-duality? What is not duality? What am I talking about? So Of course, we should begin by talking about duality because I must have said it a million times since we've been on the phone, or at least a dozen, and maybe you don't necessarily have a reference point for what that means in terms of Buddhism. Duality or dualism is a state of mind where we take part of reality and relate to it like it's the whole thing. It manifests in many different ways. One of the ways that's really obvious that we often think about and hear about is subject-object dichotomies, where we think that our own experience of something is totally separate than the other active objects in our field. For example, in personal relationships where we think, oh, well, that person was always behaving in a bad way towards me, whereas I was completely innocent and wise, which may be the case. There are a few cases that that takes place. But sometimes in ways that we don't realize, that separation where we are totally separate from what we're perceiving isn't so distinct. In fact, the Buddhist teachings say that this dualistic experience where we think we're separate from what we're experiencing is actually based on a misperception. Instead, relationships are most often taking place with both people involved, that the dynamics we experience with other people may actually be developing not only because of the other person and their choices, but also because of dynamics that we are participating in. Either we could think of what they call in psychology like unconscious dynamics, which we would say in Tantric Buddhism as subtle mind dynamics that we are not aware of. Those unconscious dynamics might be taking place and influencing how our interactions always come up with this person. Or we may in some ways be triggering them or antagonizing them in ways that we don't realize. Maybe if we thought about it in terms of karma, we have some pattern and habit that we enact with them habitually. So this kind of view that we're very separate from what we perceive and separate from other people, well, that's dualism. And it's a limited view because it misses interdependence, how we're actually connected to what is taking place and connected to other people, connected to their reactions, and connected to the situation. Of course, what's really interesting about non-duality in Tantric Buddhism is that both connection and separation are taking place. So while it is true that there is some separation, there is how we are behaving and the choices we make, and there's how they're behaving and the choices that they make, that separation is taking place, and at the same time, so is interdependence, that we're participating together in a dynamic and influencing one another, and our minds are connected in ways we may not realize. So both of these things are taking place. We are interconnected and we're separate. That is the paradigm of non-duality from Tantric Buddhism. Oftentimes when people think of non-duality, they think of it in terms of oneness. We're all one. And then there's the joke about the Spanish yogi who's all one. Yes, we are all one. That is aspect of non-duality. But at the same time, we're also two, we're also three, we're also four, we're also five, we're multiplicity as well. And that is something that most people's idea of non-duality doesn't include. They see the goal of oneness, and that is progress from feeling completely separate from everything around us, from not taking responsibility for our connections with what's taking place in our lives. To realize that we're interconnected is progress. To realize that there is a oneness taking place is actually a realization. And so the Buddha's teaching is that we are one, absolutely, but we're also two. And so here we have this idea of dualism that manifests in our lives in so many ways. Some people, seeing the problems with dualism, decide that therefore spirituality and enlightenment should be about not having dualism, and they reject dualism. Teaching in Tantric Buddhism is not based on rejecting dualism, because that rejection itself is duality. That sense of dividing against some aspect of phenomenon as a way to deal with it. And what an interesting idea that is. Dividing against dualism would make oneness? No, it actually doesn't make sense. There's still a division there. And so here in Tantric Buddhism, we have this understanding of non-duality that includes oneness and separateness, which these are really important aspects of what we are as human beings and aspects of our experience. If we're always running away from that aloneness and separateness, then we will create a lot of suffering and confusion. And in fact, that was the Buddha's teaching in the Four Noble Truths, that our fleeing from that experience of non-duality is what creates suffering. Only by learning to integrate ourselves with both aspects of what we are, the oneness and the separateness, the interdependence and the independence, this interconnectedness and our aloneness, only by integrating ourselves and learning how to be in peace in both experiences could we ever really be fully alive and full human beings and able to relate to reality however it's manifesting. So dualism is really this state where we're always relating to part of reality instead of the whole, where we are dividing ourselves from another, where we divide subject and object, which is a way of feeling separate from what we're perceiving, where we have divisions like body and mind, where they are seen as really distinct and separate, or the difference between creator and created, or this strict divide between masculine and feminine. The problem with dualism as a view in life is that it denies half of reality. So why would we do it? It denies impermanence, it denies discontinuity, it denies insubstantiality, it denies ambiguity. Why would we want to do that? The reason we take a dualistic perspective in our lives is because we don't know how to be in insecurity, don't know how to be in impermanence, don't know how to be with discontinuity, don't know how to be with groundlessness, we don't know how to be with insubstantiality. We're not sure how to be at peace and present and wholehearted in ambiguity. And so we keep trying to find a reality that's very definite, is really solid, that is very secure, that is totally controlled, where we have found a definite self, and we know who we are, and we know what's going to happen, and we are wanting to have this feeling of total continuity. And we look at our lives from this dualistic perspective so much. It infuses everything. We often talk about in Tantric Buddhism as this is like a kind of addiction that we have. Anytime that we have a moment of insecurity, we have a moment of groundlessness come up, or we sense impermanence, then we assure ourselves that that's not real, that actually that feeling of unreality is it's really unreal and it's going to go away, or it's because we don't have the right car or job or relationship or whatever circumstance we think would give us our dualistic version of life that's totally solid, totally secure, and totally permanent. So doing this is a really big struggle in our lives because it's only half of reality is like that. We could think of there's this whole other side of life that is chaos and randomness and groundlessness and what we talk about in Buddhism as shunya, it's open ground. And if we don't learn how to be there, we will suffer continuously in our life because it will always be showing itself. And we think of those things usually in a kind of negative way, like groundlessness is this horrible thing and insecurity is a horrible thing. And part of that is our dualistic addiction. We're so paranoid about experiencing our insecurity and our vulnerability and our own sense of emptiness and our own sense of separateness. Or interconnectedness. We're so paranoid about experiencing it that we have shut ourselves off from it more and more and more and more. So when it comes up, we use tactics to make sure we don't experience it. And those tactics in Buddhism, they're known as the five poisons. We use anger and clinging and closed-mindedness and jealousy and envy and controlling behavior. We use these neurotic mind tactics, difficult word to say today for some reason, we use neurotic mind tactics, there we go, in order to avoid experiencing that open dimension. And because we're constantly engaged in those neurotic mind tactics and this kind of rejection of reality, or we're making an excuse and saying, oh no, I'm only feeling that way because I don't have enough money, or I don't have a job, or I don't have the relationship, or I need to lose weight. Because we're making these excuses or caught up in the neurotic mind poisons, then we experience that open dimension of groundlessness less and less and less, and then we become further and further and further estranged from it. So then we can develop a lot of these phobic ideas about it, about how horrible chaos is and how terrifying insecurity is and how horrible our aloneness is. And we have this real sense of projection and fear about what those states are. And it's true, when we taste them, when we stumble into them, when we can't help but have them be thrown in our face, because we're so inexperienced at being in those states, when they arise for us, we have no idea how to be, so it is not necessarily a pleasant experience. In fact, it can be really difficult. And, wow, Buddhism is so compassionate, this teaching that it's possible for us to actually be at peace in those states, and that those states are not some kind of terrible, treacherous foreign land, that impermanence and discontinuity and our insubstantiality and ambiguity and that whole dimension is actually what we are made of, and it's our nature to be there, and that they present a gift of being fully alive to us, and they open up to us up to our wisdom quality. And if you think about this idea of non-duality, actually it's really quite refreshing, because change can only happen from that perspective. Transformation could only happen if there was some open-endedness. If everything's solid and definite and patterned and like an eternalism, it's all meant to be and it's all already decided, then there's no chance for changing. Also, too, there's freshness in impermanence. There is a harsh side of impermanence and discontinuity, where we lose people we love, where we lose things that we don't want to lose. And also, too, there's a fresh side of impermanence. It puts us in the moment, and it communicates to us the moment in the way that nothing else can. And it continuously gives us the opportunity to renew. Because of impermanence, we know that we can be a new person today, because our neurosis is impermanent. Our past karma is impermanent. Whatever mistakes we've made, their effects are impermanent. So we can begin again, and so we can be different, and so we can face life anew, and so we can have a new day. And so these qualities that we have such a prejudice against when we're in the dualistic mind state actually present a resource of wisdom and life energy and presence and freshness. And really, they present to us what we are and what reality is. Question isn't whether we're going to experience difficulty in our life. We are going to. That's life. It's going to happen. And maybe we'll be fortunate and there'll be less. But the dualistic mind state is this sense of trying to avoid that forever at all costs, whereas in the non-dual approach, the you might be instead to learn how to be relaxed no matter what is arising, so that as our difficulties come up in our lives and present to us impermanence and discontinuity and insubstantiality and ambiguity, that we can face those situations with great sanity and with a sense of total connectedness to what we are, a wholehearted presence and a wakefulness. That's the Buddhist teaching that I love so much. So dualism is this sense of trying to divide reality basically into this secure, solid one and the one that's not, and you try and make excuses for the one that's not every time it comes up and pretend it's not there or use the neurotic mind states to avoid experiencing it. So dualism is actually one way of four that we avoid experiencing what we are and reality as it is. And most of the time people hear this much of the teaching and we can all get, oh yeah, that's a limited mind state. You know, love takes place in the intensity of impermanence and insubstantiality. When people fall in love, it's so fantastic, but it's tremendously vulnerable. And the more secure it is, the more insecure it also is, because there's the reality we might lose the person, or there's that sense of really so much risk in communicating in an authentic way. And we keep seeing that reality is always presenting to us this non-dual taste where we have the experience of ground and groundlessness, of solidity and vulnerability, and it's always coming to us like this. And so we might think, okay, right, dualism, it's a limited point of view, who needs it, forget that. And that's it's a good start to be aware of how limiting dualism is. But then usually the next thing that people do in their spiritual lives is reject dualism. And wow, what a mind trip that is. This is actually a dualistic strategy. That rejection mind, where we reject our environment, where we reject people, we reject ideas, we just throw them away, rather than communicating with them and allowing the situation to liberate or evolving it into a next stage, we just cut it off. And in Buddhism, in the yogic tradition in particular, part of the path is not about rejecting dualism. It's about understanding it. Wow, that is the path. It's not about rejecting dualism. It is about understanding it so that the confused basis of it can liberate. And instead, what we have is this very holistic experience of non-duality, where dualism is actually one texture of it. It doesn't cut itself off from that, but instead it is something that includes dualistic facets of experience, but they're experienced in a different way. And that's something I'll talk about shortly. Three more, and these ones will be much easier to cover in a brief way because of how deep we've gone into dualism together in this short of time. So the four partial descriptions of reality that we usually enter into instead of experiencing non-duality, the first one is dualism itself. And in a sense, the other three are also just forms of dualism, and you'll see how. It's so interesting. Not duality is not the same as non-duality. If we think of what is dualism, then what's not dualism? Well, dualism is a separation of self and other. So is non-duality, does that mean it's self and other interconnected? Yes, but it also is the reality of ourselves and others being separate. both of these things are taking place, and it's a paradox, and it takes much more awareness to hold both of these dynamics in our attention at the same time. Dualism is this sense of division between the person perceiving the subject and the object that they're perceiving. So what does that mean then? I feel I'm separate than how I'm perceiving other people to behave. That could be an example. So then non-duality, would that mean I'm not separate? How me and another behave is totally interconnected. Well, yes, that is true. And at the same time, it's also not. Both things are taking place. And if dualism is that sense of dividing masculine and feminine, and non-duality is masculine and feminine integrated as two facets of one reality, and at the same time can be expressed or manifest separately. And so you see, we have this interesting dynamic of both things taking place. That is non-duality, according to Tantric Buddhism. Second of the four is what's called monism, and we've already discussed that. In monism, we maintain the concept that everything is one. We're all one. You're all one. And maybe this is in terms of our religion, that we see everyone as a facet of the deity that we are relating to, or a facet of Buddha. And the beautiful way of overcoming that excessive division that we experience in duality, where we're just so cut off from our interconnectedness. But the way that it deals with this is by clinging to unity, and in that sense it becomes a dualistic expression. All of these experiences, dualism, monism, eternalism, and nihilism that we're talking about today, are actual experiences of reality that are based on true perceptions, however they're partial. In this case of monism, where we suddenly break through and realize everything is one, our realization has to continue from that point, or from the perspective of Buddhism, we're only experiencing part of reality. Everything is one and united and interconnected, but there's also multiplicity and divergence. And so the experience of oneness, I think, is so just joyful and blissful in our connectedness. And it's easy to feel so deprived from that. I think that that's one reason why Westerners really gravitate towards monism. Even though they call it non-duality, we would call it in Buddhism monism, because that sense of oneness, we're starved for that our whole life. It's not really integrated with our culture as a spoken reality and as something that's communicated in media and stories and in our social situations and families. And we haven't been thinking that way, and that's why we have so many ecological problems. Quite the contrary, we think of ourselves as totally separate and living in that me, me, me narrow perspective. We make choices like that, which have consequences that affect everyone else, because the interdependence is so real. So this is a very wise and beautiful state, and too, it's part of the story. It's there. We are all one. And also, multiplicities of reality are taking place. I think a great example that always excites me is when people say, well, all religions are one. And on the one hand, I understand that too and feel that, because so many times I'll hear other teachers and be just amazed to hear the commonalities that we share in our traditions. And too, to say religions are all one is a really limited way of talking about religions, in my point of view. I think it can be helpful from other perspectives and important, so I don't think it should be obliterated. But for me to speak that way would be a real problem, because it ignores the fact that there are major differences between religions, and they don't need to all be the same in order to be tolerated and respected, and for us to have an environment of religious peace with one another. Instead, that notion of tolerance, I mean, talk about a limited word, instead of tolerance, that atmosphere of respect could actually be there because all religions are different, and that is okay that they're different. They're quite different. To me, my religion is very different than a religion where I'm sacrificing animals, for example, or maybe a different kind of religion that believes in finding the self. Those are different notions than what's in Buddhism. And the differences are what's so exciting and interesting. And the way Buddhists live with that is that we understand that those differences don't indicate that one religion is right and one religion is wrong. It indicates that religions are different for different people, that they are right for whom they're right and they're wrong for whom they're wrong. And that those things can all take place at once because our view of reality is that it manifests in different ways for different people according to their method of experiencing reality, according to their subjectivity. It is different, and so different religious traditions are important for that person. The teaching that this comes from in Buddhism is one called the Nine Jhanas, and it's given by Padmasambhava, the founder of my lineage of yogic Buddhism. And it's such a brilliant understanding of how even in Buddhism there's so many different ways of practicing. Which one is right? All of them, but only exactly for who they're right for. For the people that they're wrong for, they're totally wrong. And so we don't need to say that all of Buddhism is one. Though it is one, and it's not just one. There's multiplicity and divergence there, and it's really important. Both of those things are important aspects of experiencing our world with greater wakefulness and greater precision. It's like saying, the funniest way to think of monism is if we just replaced your wife and with some other woman and said, well, they're all one, because we are all one, it would be unacceptable. No, there is difference. There's distinction. There is identity. These are all things taking place in addition to our oneness. And in order to be full human beings, fully equipped to relate to reality right now, we have to develop the capacity to relate with both these dimensions of what we are and what reality is, according to Dandric Buddhism at least. So the problem with monism, it denies the experience of multiplicity and divergence, and it suppresses our experience of separation and individuality. Now, there are Buddhist traditions that individuality is suppressed as a method to communicate with this dimension of oneness. So it could be a method that we take on for a period of time. And of course, what example is that? Well, if I were to become a nun, then I shave my head and I wear the same clothes as 1,000 other nuns. And in a sense, we are renouncing our identity. What a brilliant method for experiencing oneness. Really experiencing our whole world in a way that's freed up from our usual central reference point of identity. I'm not going to shave my head because I'm a yogi. So we keep our hair, and our vows are actually to keep our hair. And so that's not going to take place. In our tradition, our experience emphasizes the individuality, that we see the multiplicity of forms and those differences, the art of each of our individual appearance, as a way of communicating non-duality. And so we see there are just two different methods to opening up ways of experiencing the phenomenal world and experiencing ourselves. And in Tantric Buddhism, these are both valued and both important, that we experience our oneness and we experience our separation and individuality. Also, we have eternalism, something we've spoken about, as the third of the four partial descriptions of reality that are often taken to mean non-duality, but it's not non-duality, and that is eternalism. Wow, this one, it's so juicy, the idea, everything has meaning. And I think that it's so important to us as Westerners, I can say from my own perspective, is that we're really not culturally trained to look for hidden meanings that may be taking place. Instead, we seem to have more of the view of nihilism where things are taken at their most face value. There's no sense of looking for that depth unless you end up being trained in some religious or spiritual tradition in particular. It's not there in our culture to look for the hidden meaning and that thread of sacredness that we connect to through that. And this view of everything has meaning, everything's meant to be, everything has a purpose, everything has a plan, it's actually a glimpse into an aspect of real reality according to Tantric Buddhism. And it's only a partial glimpse, because not only do we have pattern, we also have chaos. Not only do we have all of these chain of events that gradually and cumulatively lead up to whatever is meant to be, that can take place, but we also have meaningless events and random events. And this is something I think that is interesting, because on the one hand we have the cultural norm where that meaninglessness is sort of there. And then we have the extreme in so many New Age philosophies where everything has meaning. And really, non-duality is something that allows for both to take place. That in Tantric Buddhism, when we say non-duality, we mean the dimension in which both meaning and meaninglessness are dynamically intertwined and taking place in ways that cannot be predicted definitely. It's ambiguous. It can be really helpful for us to have any one of these views as long as we don't take them to be the be-all, end-all of reality. For example, with monism, we're experiencing everything as one, and we experience that in such a joyful, blissful state, perhaps, that then we want to hold on to it, and we suppress every other experience of separation and individuality that arises so we could try and stay in that. But now it's become something else. Now it's become monism and become, instead of this taste of reality, become another tactic for not experiencing reality as it is only right now, wholeheartedly and wakefully. With eternalism, in the same way, I think that it can be such an interesting experience to look for meaning and then find it and be changed by it. And in Tantric Buddhism, we don't deny that can take place. It's just really the kind of meaning that we can find, which is an open-ended kind. There isn't definite meaning or absolute meaning, but open-ended. And I think one example, we probably all share this experience where we found some event in our life had a certain meaning. Then we look back 5 years later, 10 years later, and what it means to us has totally changed. How do we deal with that? How do we make that coherent? Okay, that's dualism. We need to make everything coherent, right? It has to continuously make sense in a logical way. Well, that's the thing. It's not coherent. It did mean something at that time. And that's what it meant at that time. And now we see another meaning. And which one is real? Well, they both are. Which one is unreal? They both are. Because the meaning that we find is one that is open-ended and it's empty by nature. It's permeated by shunya, the sense of ungraspableness and our own subjectivity and our limits of perception and the sense of infinite wisdom and intuition we have. The problem with eternalism is if we think everything's part of a plan and everything has a pattern and everything has a purpose, then how could there ever be change or volition, right? If everything's fated, if everything's based on karma, how could there be enlightenment? And Nagarjuna Rinpoche often tells this joke of the last two bodhisattvas who are, the bodhisattva is the Buddhist method of enlightenment where we put others first as a way of experiencing the vastness of mind and knowing reality more directly. So bodhisattva, it's a term that means someone who's very compassionate and puts someone first. So the joke of the two bodhisattvas is that the last two bodhisattvas to take enlightenment, they say, after you. And the next one says, no, after you. And the first one says, no, after you. And it goes on like that forever. So isn't that interesting about eternalism, this idea, if everything's based on karma, how could we ever have enlightenment if it's all based on pattern? So there's some partialness here again. There's both pattern and open-endedness. There's pattern and chaos. Karma, and there's a whole dimension that karma doesn't operate. And to be free and wakeful, to relate to what we are, to have whole hog access to reality, we need to be able to communicate with both of these dimensions. This can be really important when we're ascribing meaning to events that's limiting. And what's beautiful about this view is that if we are finding the meaning and it's open-ended, then that makes possibility for us to see other meanings we might not have seen. For us to discover that sometimes things are meaningless or random. Then we have the fourth nihilism. Nihilism is the idea of this four partial descriptions of reality that are not non-duality, but that are often mistaken as non-duality. So the first was dualism, second monism, third eternalism, fourth is nihilism. So nihilism is this notion that there's nothing beyond material reality. The world that we perceive with our senses is it, and there's no greater meaning. And, of course, we could see a problem with this as people involved in spiritual pursuits is that it denies this whole dimension of sacred, symbolic, unseen, and subtle universe. Oftentimes when I'm teaching Buddhist classes, I rarely meet people who have a strictly nihilistic perspective, though I meet a lot of people who are monist who think that that's non-duality, or I meet a lot of people that are eternalist and think that's non-duality. But what I do meet is lots of practitioners who end up falling into nihilism when they try and apply teachings like this. So now, here we have this paradigm, a sophisticated paradigm, because Tantric Buddhism is so brilliant. It's so sophisticated. Once we start to take this on, we begin to see how we're constantly using the four extremes, that it's there a lot in our perception and in our reality. And so that's the point. The point is to see how much we leave awareness. These are our tactics for leaving awareness, because non-dual experience is equated with awareness, since non-duality is the nature of reality according to Tantric Buddhism. Whenever we depart from it, then we're in an altered reality. And so once we have a paradigm like this, then, wow, that's interesting to see how often we're departing from reality into one of these views, all for one reason, which I'll talk about briefly, because we're almost done here. So with nihilism, we are departing from just the complexity and depth and responsibility that's implicated by thinking in terms of interdependence and thinking in terms of ambiguity and thinking in terms of these ideas of multiplicity and divergence and all the things we've talked about. And if we let go of all that, things become really simple. And that's nihilism. It is a very simple view of reality. And so in that case, it's very straightforward and it's very beautiful for that. And I think that that's why we go to it. Usually when we get these four paradigms, as we discover we go into them all the time, it's easy to drop into nihilism, and I'll tell you how. Because you may not recognize how you've done this, but I know lots of times practitioners will share with me, oh, well, I had this thought, and then I recognized it was dualism, and then I said, okay, that's not real, and I just cut that off, and I went back to the situation. And that actually is a form of nihilism, this obliterating of dualism. Once you identify confusion, you just say, forget that. Remember, we don't realize non-duality by rejecting dualism. It's by understanding it. So what do I mean by understanding it is that we see what dualism is for. We use dualism. We use monism. We use eternalism. And we use nihilism as a way to avoid the empty ground we're suddenly standing on, to avoid the groundless, ambiguous, the feeling that that gives us, which we might interpret as threat. It might feel like a big threat, or things being out of control, or things being unreal or too vast. We might feel really disconnected. All of that might be there. And so we use one of the four extremes that we've talked about as a way to avoid experiencing that. The remedy in Tantric Buddhism is that we train, that we learn to be in those states without freaking out, wigging out, going into the five poisons, without departing into the four extremes. We learn to relax the moment that's presenting itself. And to actually do this is something that quite a bit of motivation, and that's why we have the teachings to continuously re-inspire us as to why this is important. For Buddhists, it's actually our ticket to freedom, because if we can relax right now, then this is another moment that we're not having to flee and be insane to avoid. And so we found our freedom again. And we can develop a skill to be awake and sane, however reality is manifesting. Every moment we're getting the opportunity to do that again. Either we can use our neurotic mind states and the four extremes to avoid it, or we can recognize the real issue, whatever details are presenting themselves, the real issue at hand, according to Vajrayana Buddhism, and especially the Dzogchen teachings that I come from the perspective of. The real issue at hand is that we don't know how to be right there. And because of that, we misperceive and get confused and deluded and distorted and warped, and we're just a little bit off. Dukkha is a Sanskrit word, or a lot off, like a full-on confusion and suffering. So, what is non-duality then in Tantric Buddhism? It's a state that doesn't rely on obliterating dualism. Non-duality is actually a state where dualism, monism, eternalism, nihilism are taking place as reflections of reality, but they're all partial reflections. Non-duality in Tantric Buddhism is based on the understanding of why we go into the dualistic state in the first place. If we understand what we're avoiding, then we can start to communicate with what it is we're avoiding. Start to learn how to be relaxed and open in ambiguity. Start to learn how to be relaxed and open in insubstantiality. Learn how to be relaxed and open in our aloneness and discontinuity and impermanence. And the more that we do that, the more we can become friendly with these states and find out they're not what we feared them to be necessarily, and that the tension that we often feel in them doesn't have to be there. Then we don't need the four extremes, and we don't need neurotic mind states. Those were only to avoid that state. So it's based on understanding dualism, why we do it, seeing what it is we're avoiding, and then training to open up to this dimension of what we are, of non-dual experience. So in Tantric Buddhism, non-duality relies on entering into shunya, what's called emptiness, or the ambiguous, open-ended, insecure dimension of our moment. If you've ever heard yourself doing fight or flight in a moment where you're saying, forget this, I'm never going to have to experience this again, and you have this whole plan of walking out. So that would be a great time. Be right where you are. Even though that might be also with tension and lot of emotion, use the methods that you're trained in. That's why we have all these methods in Tantric Buddhism, to relax right where you are instead, rather than rejecting the moment or rejecting our environment or rejecting our mind. Instead, we use the methods to relax right where we are, in that ambiguous, open-ended, out of control, insecure, alone, discontinuous, groundless moment. The more we can do this, the more, in a way, it's like keeping our head on straight, that we can be wakeful, and rather than being run by conditioned mind scripts, we can have choices and relate to our life in a different way where we're present with it. Non-duality in Tantric Buddhism, it does rely on having some kind of skills or tools, and that's, of course, beyond what we can go through on the phone. That's why we have meditation practices, and we'll do a short meditation to end, as we always do. But that's why we have these methods, because we need to, being in the non-dual texture of experience is something that we're not going to get to by analyzing things if our analysis is based on dualistic logic, which that's how it usually is. We're only going to be able to find that sense of peace in the moment through kind of maybe bypassing that or going beyond it. So it relies on methods. By using methods that we're trained in, whether it's like in Vajrayana, we have Yidam practices, and we have sitting meditation methods, we have inner yogas, we have all kinds of symbolic ritual practice. These are all ways for us to relate to the four extremes and relate to whatever mind poisons without rejecting them, instead using them as the basis to experience the non-dual texture. So non-duality in Tantric Buddhism is the state where pattern and randomness are not polarized and they're not divided. They both take place. Ambiguity and definiteness are both aspects of reality. Multiplicity and individual identity are experienced. Sameness and difference take place. Illusion and reality coexist as both facets of experience. Meaning and meaninglessness both take place. So, I hope that this brief introduction has been useful to you in experiencing a little taste of what the tantric view of reality is in Buddhism, and also to help you to understand that there are many different visions of non-duality and what it means. In some traditions, non-duality might mean what we call monism, or what we call eternalism, or nihilism, or even dualism. But for our tradition, non-duality actually has this meaning of pattern and randomness, duality and non-duality, ambiguity and definiteness, ground and groundlessness, multiplicity and individual identity, inseparability of sameness and difference, illusion and reality, meaning and meaninglessness. And you see, that puts us in a very ambiguous space. So that's where we end up doing our training, learning how to be with our life. You know, there is this idea that in order to drink beer, you have to drink it a little while and get used to the taste, and then you find the taste for it. And in some sense, that's what we're doing. Oftentimes in Tibetan meditation practice, we can describe it as getting used to what we are, getting used to reality, getting used to a whole experience of our world that's not apprehended through the four extremes, that's not apprehended through our anger and depression and clinging and controllingness and competitiveness. How else then do we experience? Wow, that is the exciting journey that Tantric Buddhism puts us into, is learning to experience in some way that is not rejecting those states, but is not confined by those limits. So thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful day. Have a very happy, peaceful, joyous holiday full of forgiveness.